Without dirt, there could never have been cities or great kings. So claimed the people of Babylon, who knew full well that their civilization had been fashioned out of mud. The crops in a field, the bricks in a city wall, what would these have been without mud? Hemmed in as they were by the bleakness of mountain and desert, the Babylonians could gaze at their land and know they were the most fortunate of people, blessed not by one, but by two mighty rivers, prodigious evidence of the favour of the gods. The fertility of their estates, the towering splendour of their buildings, the easy passage of their merchants to the sea, all were gifts of the Euphrates and the Tigris. Well might Greek travellers have described the mud steppes as Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers, for without water, all the wealth of Babylon would have been as nothing but dry dust. As it was, the city ranked as the jewel in the king of Persia's crown. Lose it, and he might lose everything, as the Babylonians themselves were well aware. Never lacking self-regard, they were perfectly accustomed to view their city as the fulcrum of great events. For centuries, their ambitions had shaken the Near East. Of all the many foes of Assyria, Babylon had been the most obdurate, and had led, with the Medes, the revolt that had destroyed the hated empire. Over its wreckage, the Babylonians had then raised their own dominion, imposing upon their neighbours, and by the same amiable methods once employed by the Assyrians, an iron yoke of servitude. Only by feasting vampire-like on far-off lands had she been able to maintain herself, satisfying her monstrous appetites with foreign peoples as well as products. Immigrants, whether slaves and exiles or mercenaries and merchants, thronged the streets of Babylon, history's first truly multicultural city. Even after the loss of her independence to Cyrus, she had remained the Near East's supreme melting pot, her streets filled with 1,000 different tongues, the roaring of exotic animals and the flashing of strange birds, the golds and scarlets and nacres of the ends of the earth. What, in comparison, were the backwoods of Persia? The homeland of an empire, may be, but hardly the heartbeat of the world. It was scarcely surprising, then, that the Babylonians should have regarded Persian rule as merely, the gods willing, a temporary aberration. Cyrus, with his customary imperious magnanimity, had disdained to eliminate the defeated royal family. And even though the last king, Nabonidus, had been an old man when his city fell, on his death he had left no lack of thrusting heirs. One of these, taking advantage of the chaos unleashed by Bardia's murder, emerged in early October to proclaim himself Nebuchadnezzar III. Here, for all those who had suffered from the Babylonians' attentions in the past, was a name of ominous portent. For the second Nebuchadnezzar had been Babylon's greatest ruler, the conqueror of Jerusalem, a shatterer of cities and a breaker of proud nations, his memory preserved among those he had defeated as something fabulous, golden, and deadly. But if the name of the new king would have sent shivers throughout the Near East, its effect on the Babylonians themselves would surely have been to set them dreaming. As was only right, and Nebuchadnezzar would once again reign supreme.